You are listening to the podcast of the White Church at the Upriver YMCA in Minnesota. Our community is about seeking Jesus and sharing His love.
So Daniel was brought before the king, and the king said to him, "Are you Daniel, one of the exiles my father the king brought from Judah? I have heard that the spirit of the gods is in you, and that you have insight, intelligence, and outstanding wisdom. The wise man and enchanters were brought before me to read this writing and tell me what it means, but they could not explain it. Now I have heard that you are able to give interpretation and solve difficult problems. If you can read this writing and tell me what it means, you will be clothed in purple and have a gold chain placed around your neck, and you will be made the third highest ruler in the kingdom." Then Daniel answered the king, "You may keep your gifts for yourself and give your rewards to someone else. Nevertheless, I will read the writing for the king and tell him what it means. Your Majesty, the Most High God, gave your father Nebuchadnezzar sovereignty and greatness and glory and splendor. Because of the high position he gave him, all the nations and peoples of every language dreaded and feared him. Those the king wanted to put to death, he put to death. Those he wanted to spare, he spared. Those he wanted to promote, he promoted. And those he wanted to humble, he humbled. But when his heart became arrogant and hardened with pride, he was deposed from his royal throne and stripped of his glory. He was driven away from people and given the mind of an animal. He lived with the wild donkeys and ate grass like the ox. And his body was drenched with the dew of heaven until he acknowledged the Most High God is sovereign over all kingdoms on earth and sets over them anyone he wishes. But you, Belshazzar, his son, have not humbled yourself, though you knew all this. Instead, you have set yourself up against the Lord of heaven. You had the goblets from the temple brought to you, and you and your nobles and wives and your concubines drank wine from them. You praised the gods of silver and gold, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone, which cannot see or hear or understand. But you did not honor the God who holds in his hand your life and all your ways. Therefore, he sent the hand that wrote this inscription. This is the inscription that was written. Many, many Tekel Parson. This is what these words mean. Many. God has numbered the days of your reign and brought it to an end. Tekel, you have been weighed on the scales and found wanting. Peres, your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians.
The writing on the wall. That's a saying that probably a lot of us are familiar with. We've heard it before. It's been so widely used that you can find it. Listen to this eclectic collection. The writing on the wall you will find is the title of a Scottish rock band, an Indian novel, an album by Destiny's Child, a silent film from 1910, a song by OK Go, and a recent book about the Chinese economy. All called the writing on the wall. Now, many of us know intuitively what the saying means. The writing on the wall is an idiom that means we have become aware of imminent danger. We can see misfortune up ahead. The writing on the wall is a forecast, and things don't look good. But perhaps not as many of us know where the saying comes from, culturally, nor the meaning of the writing on the wall when it literally happened. That's what's up today in Daniel 5. And Belshazzar's feast, which is where this saying comes from. We've been making our way through the narrative passages of Daniel in this message series called Unshakable. And we have these big chapter-long stories of the book of Daniel. So again today, we just featured a little middle portion. And now we'll back up and catch the whole thing and understand a little bit more about the writing on the wall. I do encourage you to keep that Bible open in front of you. Have that accessible. We'll read some, we'll paraphrase some, and make our way in the next few minutes through chapter 5. We'll begin in verse 1. So this is before our scripture reading. Here's how it sets up. King Belshazzar gave a great banquet for 1,000 of his nobles and drank wine with them. While Belshazzar was drinking his wine, he gave orders to bring in the gold and silver goblets that Nebuchadnezzar, his father, had taken from the temple in Jerusalem, so that the king and his nobles, his wives, and his concubines might drink from them. Now, a chapter ago, if you were here last week, we were still dealing with Nebuchadnezzar. But 2 to 3 years after the events of chapter 4, he died. And since that time, And it's been a while now. There's 30 years since chapter 4. King Belshazzar now sits on the throne. It says Nebuchadnezzar was his father, but father in Aramaic means grandfather, ancestor, or even just predecessor. So Nebuchadnezzar was his grandfather. And to keep this straight, I've got a little family tree for us this morning. There's the family tree. Belshazzar's father was a guy named Nabonidus over on the right. And Nabonidus was sharing the throne, actually, with his son Belshazzar. Now, this came about through a pretty peculiar situation. Nabonidus, as you can see on the family tree, had married Nebuchadnezzar's daughter. That's how he gets onto the throne. But he wasn't much into the Babylonian gods. Nabonidus was a moon worshiper. And I've got a picture of what could be moon worship. So this was not in vogue in Babylon. But Nabonidus was a moon worshiper. And so he chose to live 500 miles south of Babylon, where moon worship was practiced in Tema, Arabia. So he's king of Babylon, but he's hardly ever home. He reigns for 17 years, but we know there was a 10-year stretch where he never even set foot in Babylon. So his son Belshazzar co-reigns with his father and was the de facto king of Babylon while his dad was off worshiping the moon. But back home, all was not well now at this time. The Persians are sitting on the doorstep of Babylon. And the Babylonian army had just gotten a little whooping by the Persians outside the city walls. That was just a few days prior to the night of this big party. So we probably think that's an odd time to throw such a huge party, you know, when your enemies are outside the city walls and it just beat up on you a little bit. So why did Belshazzar do this? Why did he have this big party? Well, maybe it was to boost morale. There are a few different theories as to why, but the scholars all agree on one thing for sure, and that is that the great city of Babylon was considered an impenetrable fortress. And I grabbed a little picture, just some snapshot of what ancient Babylon looked like as we imagine this. But it was considered undefeatable. Sort of like, as I read about it, I was thinking of the Titanic. You know, it's impossible that this city would ever sink. It was so well fortified, so well protected, that any foreign army would find it impossible to take. They had 20 years of food for the city of Babylon stored behind these city walls. They had the Euphrates River. You can see the river and the moat and things like that. The Euphrates River ran right into the city, right under the castle wall, so they had basically a lifetime supply of water from the river. And they had this deep moat, if you imagine making a sand castle on the beach, just like that, surrounded the city of Babylon. And those city walls, we talked about those a little bit more last week, they were 40 feet high and 25 feet wide, so that you could drive a chariot right around the top of the castle walls. And there were two of them. If one was good, they thought, well, we'll make two. And the outer one was 17 miles long. This city was impossible to take down. So Belshazzar wants to show that there is no reason for fear, even as these goofy little Persians out there are knocking on the door. So he calls nobles together for a feast. 1,000 nobles. That is a whole lot of people. I think the average wedding, probably in our neck of the woods, 150, 200 people. Does that sound about right? Maybe some weddings have more than 200. And those are pretty big banquets as you go to the wedding dinner. Well, this is 1,000 nobles, plus any of the ladies who would have been present, including the wives and concubines of the king. Now, if you're unsure about the word concubine, that's your homework. You can Google that later. Not going to illustrate that up there. So it's a huge party, and the wine is flowing. The language of the passage, if you were reading it in the Aramaic, it definitely suggests that this party was wild, and the king and his 1,000 nobles are 3 sheets to the wind. And it's in the middle of that mess that the king calls out for the gold and silver goblets that had been taken from the Jerusalem temple some 70 years earlier. In the book of Ezra, it says that the number of goblets that were taken from Jerusalem was about 5,400. 5,400 goblets from the temple. So there's plenty to go around. They are retrieved, and the text carries on like this in verse 3. So they brought in the gold goblets that had been taken from the temple of God in Jerusalem, and the king and his nobles, his wives and his concubines drank from them.
As they drank the wine, they praised the God of gold and silver, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone. So the wine's flowing, the fancy new goblets are going around, and as the people drink, it's like Toastmasters, one after another, they stand up and they're praising their favorite Babylonian gods. And we can read this and say, you know, on the surface, this story might be quite a bit different. Nobles and kings and throne rooms and gods of wood and metal. But is it really all that different when you think about it? The overconsumption of alcohol is still a problem. What is holy is profaned, even today. And modern people simply give praise to modern gods. They just change names. Now, that's not the main idea of the passage. We want to keep the main thing the plain thing, so we won't chase that rabbit trail. But let us not think in reading this story that the Babylonian world is so far off from our own. Now, I don't know what time of night the party is happening and this scene takes place, but you have to imagine 1,000 inebriated nobles doing karaoke, sloshing their drinks around in fancy goblets and praising these false gods, and that's when the clock strikes midnight, so to speak. In verse 5, suddenly, it says, it's emphatic, first word in the sentence, suddenly, the fingers of a human hand appeared and wrote on the plaster of the wall near the lampstand in the royal palace. The king watched the hand as it wrote. His face turned pale, and he was so frightened that his legs became weak and his knees were knocking. Now, we know from the historical records that kings in the ancient Near East, they usually didn't dine or drink with the rest of the common people. They were usually in their own space for that. But Belshazzar tonight is living it up, and he's strutting his stuff up there on the stage. But my, does the scene change now. These fingers appear, and right on the plaster, and the king turns white as a ghost. It literally says, when it says his legs became weak, his joints were loosened at the loins. Isn't that a picture? So his hips give way, his knees buckle, and he is humiliated in front of his 1,000 nobles. So the mood to the party changes, you know, the music dies away. It's awkward and quiet. What is the king going to do? Well, we've been reading Daniel now for 5 chapters. I mean, who's he going to call? Not Ghostbusters. But every time he calls, verse 7, the king summoned the enchanters, astrologers, and diviners. We asked the question last week, why do we tend to go back to the same old place for answers? An old hymn says it so well when it says, I tried the broken cisterns, Lord, but the waters failed. The enchanters, astrologers, and diviners have never had the answer, even though they're called upon in just about every chapter in the book so far. The second half of verse 7, let's pick it up. Then he said to these wise men of Babylon, whoever reads this writing and tells me what it means will be clothed in purple and have a gold chain placed around his neck, and he'll be made the third highest ruler in the kingdom. Third highest because who's number one? His dad, the moon worshiper. He's number two. And so spot number 3 is next. Verse 8. Then all the king's wise men came in, but they could not read the writing or tell the king what it meant. So King Belshazzar became even more terrified, and his face grew more pale. His nobles were baffled. And now finally, someone enters the scene with some sense. And of course, who is it? It is the mom of the party. Mother knows best. There she is. The queen enters the room, and presumably she's the queen mother. This is Nabonidus' wife and Belshazzar's mom. And she marches into this pathetic scene here in the party room as only a mother can do. I imagine she's kicking cans out of the way and stepping over people. And she gets into that space, and in verse 10, we read this. May the king live forever. So that's the standard greeting for the king. Don't be alarmed, she says. Don't look so pale. There's a man in your kingdom who has the spirit of the holy gods in him. In the time of your father, he was found to have insight and intelligence and wisdom like that of the gods. Your father, King Nebuchadnezzar, appointed him chief of the magicians, enchanters, astrologers, and diviners. He did this because Daniel, whom the king called Belteshazzar, was found to have a keen mind and knowledge and understanding. and also the ability to interpret dreams, explain riddles, and solve difficult problems. So here's mom's advice. Call for Daniel, and he will tell you what the writing means. So here it is, 30 years since chapter 4. Remember how old Daniel was last week? Early baby boomers, young generation X, you remember the number? About 50? 30 years have elapsed. He is now 80 years old. That is a whole lot of birthday candles. Probably not advisable. Daniel is semi-retired at this point, and now fully forgotten in the king's court. But the queen mother had not forgotten, and now we're caught up to the reading where Esther picked it up in verse 13. And we'll just summarize a little bit of what we read. We won't read all those passages again. So Daniel's summoned from his retirement community in Babylon, and he appears before Belshazzar, and the king makes this proposition. He says, Daniel, if you can tell me what the writing on the wall means, I will clothe you in royal purple, I'm going to give you a gold chain, and I'll make you the third highest ruler in Babylon. Well, what does 80-year-old Daniel say to this pompous, intoxicated, frightened king? He says, first of all, you can keep the fancy outfit. Secondly, you give the gold to somebody else. Thirdly, I'm not interested in becoming third highest ruler. But I will certainly tell you about the writing on the wall. Now, right here, Daniel could have jumped to Menetekel Parson. Just, boom, shared the meaning of the writing on the wall, 10 seconds flat, and he's done. But no, he takes Belshazzar back to the story of his grandfather, back to his family tree. How Nebuchadnezzar had received authority and majesty from God. And how powerful that Nebuchadnezzar had been. He was feared by every nation on the planet. But he shared his heart became arrogant and hardened with pride. So God deposed him of his throne and stripped him of his glory. And what's Daniel doing? He's rehearsing what happened in chapter 4, 30 years earlier. And he talks about how he was driven away at that time from the people and went crazy and acted for 7 years like an animal and ate grass like an ox. And what does he say in that passage? Until, it's the theme of Daniel, until you acknowledge that the Most High God is sovereign and he sets people into power as he wishes. And then comes this critical line in our text in verse 22. Daniel then, after this mini history lesson, says, but you, Belshazzar, his son, verse 22, have not humbled yourself, though you knew all this. And that last phrase, that has bite. That is an indictment. Though you knew all this, Belshazzar. The historical records tell us that Belshazzar, he may have been the grandson, but he was a young man in the court of Nebuchadnezzar, his grandfather. And he had seen all of this happen firsthand, but he didn't learn the lesson his grandfather had. Instead, Daniel says to him, you set yourself up against the Lord. You profaned things from his temple. You praised false gods who don't hear, see, or understand. And you did not honor the God who holds your very life in his hands. Therefore, Belshazzar, he sent the hand. He put the writing on the wall. Mene, mene, tekel, parson. We'll put that up on the screen for us. The king and his nobles, you know, they maybe actually could read the writing because it was Aramaic. What they couldn't do was make any sense of it. Mene means numbered, and Daniel tells him his days are numbered, and there aren't many left. And Mene appears twice in the passage to emphasize this thing is sure and fixed. And then tekel. Tekel means weighed, and Belshazzar has been weighed on the scales of righteousness, and he doesn't weigh a whole lot. And Perez, the singular of Parson, means divided, as the Babylonian Empire will be given to the Medes and the Persians. Here's all the words again. Mene, mene, tekel, Parson. And then though Daniel said no thanks to the deal, Belshazzar follows through
And in verse 29, it says, "Then at Belshazzar's command, Daniel was clothed in purple. A gold chain was placed around his neck, and he was proclaimed the third highest ruler in the kingdom." What an awkward scene now in that banquet chamber. And that kingdom wouldn't stand long now. Look at the conclusion, the last line of the story in verse 30. "That very night, Belshazzar, king of the Babylonians, was slain, and Darius the Mede took over the kingdom at the age of 62. You know what happened? While Belshazzar was partying with his 1,000 nobles that night, it's a fascinating story. We read about it in other history books, not just in the Bible. The Persians are outside the city walls, and in the night, they are diverting the Euphrates River, flooding it out into the plains outside Babylon. What that's doing is lowering the Euphrates flowing into the city. And they lower it down to the point that all those soldiers could wade in the water in the middle of the river and walk right under the water gates into the heart of the city. And the historians tell us that the Persians took the great city of Babylon without a sound. There was no battle save the blood of Belshazzar. In one form or another, as we turn towards application, maybe you have heard this saying before: those who do not learn from the past are doomed to do what? Repeat it. Those who do not learn from the past are doomed to repeat it. The saying about the writing on the wall is about the future, but don't miss the irony that the lesson of the story is about the past. Will I repeat the proud mistakes of the past? Or will I humbly walk with God? Will I repeat the proud mistakes of my past? Or will I humbly walk with God? That's a question posed to each of us this morning. Will I repeat the same old patterns? Will I double down on prideful ways? Will I follow perhaps in the line of my family tree? Or will I humble myself before God and choose to grow? Our twin girls had a birthday this last week, and so we celebrated with the usual family birthday party with presents and cake and so on. And you know, all of that can be a little tough on a little brother who's got to watch his sisters be the center of attention and open all those gifts. And later that night, after we tucked the kids in, we heard our son talking to himself in his room and started to hear what he was saying. I don't know if he was talking to himself or one of his stuffed animals, pouring out his soul. So we grabbed the phone and secretly recorded this from outside of his bedroom. So here is from the actual transcript. "My sisters get so much cool stuff and I don't. I don't get any stuff. None of the stuff." I should add his lisp in there too as I read this. "They get so much and I'm so jealous." Now, it's one thing at age 6, but if he was still doing that at 16 or 26, it really wouldn't be funny anymore. I mean, we're trusting that as we then talk this through with him, that he is learning and growing. Belshazzar's grandfather had learned the hard way about pride and humility, but Belshazzar wasn't taking any notes. He didn't care. And now he's a little boy, all grown up, acting like a college frat boy, saying, "Oh, there'll be tomorrow. I'll clean up this mess, get rid of those bottles. I'll take care of it then. We'll worry about the Persians tomorrow. The fridge is stocked for 20 years. The wine cabinets are full. The city walls are rock solid. The Titanic will never sink." But suddenly, tomorrow never arrives, and the writing is on the wall. It says, "That very night the king was slain." It is reminiscent of the rich fool in Luke 12, isn't it? Where it says, "You fool, this very night your life will be demanded of you." There is an urgency, my brothers and sisters, in the story in Daniel 5. There is an urgency in this story. None of us knows how much time we have, not a person in the room. And nothing is guaranteed to you and I beyond the breath that we now carry in our lungs. So if God is calling you today, then don't wait until tomorrow. If God is inviting you to know Him and to walk with Him, and He most certainly is, then today is the day, not tomorrow. If God is inviting you to mature in your faith and to leave behind some old, well-worn path that you have been on, then today is the day. And if He's inviting you to learn from the pride of your past, then today is the day to walk forward in the humble nature of Daniel. What we really have in this chapter is a study in contrast between Belshazzar and Daniel. And I want to commend to you this morning the example of Daniel. You see, Belshazzar was prideful in his power. In walks 80-year-old Daniel, and he is humble in every way. Belshazzar was sacrilegious. Daniel was reverent. Belshazzar was drunk. Daniel was sober-minded. Belshazzar was profane. Daniel was spirit-filled. Belshazzar mocked God. Daniel trusted God his 80 years. Belshazzar was foolish in his youth. Daniel was wise in his youth, if you go back to chapter 1, and wise all the way through to his 80 years. Belshazzar repeated the sins of his past, and here's Daniel walking humbly with God into the future. And by the way, that future, you got to come back next week because it includes the lion's den. He's 80 years old now, and that is still ahead. But for now, we rest in this truth from the writing on the wall, and we'll put it on our wall here in our humble gymnasium. It says this: learn from the pride of the past and walk humbly with God today. Can you take that home with you? Learn from the pride of the past and walk humbly with God today. Forward is forward. Today is the day. Mene tekel parson. Our days are numbered, but they are secure in Christ. The scales of righteousness are tipped by His grace. And His love for me and for you is not divided, but you can trust Him all the way. He is on the throne.
Thanks for listening to the Y Church podcast. For more information about the Y Church, check us out online at theychurch.org.